Welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn, 512 Friday edition of Ball Don't Lie. We play jams from local bands and artists, very talented human beings that you can catch live right here in the ATX. Who are we jamming right now, Patrick?
This is Curtis Lee. He's playing a day show Saturday at Come and Take It Live.
I like that. There you go. So you know exactly where that is.
You can see the show and then watch the Texas Longhorns play.
I know a lot of people out there are going to be changing their schedules and trying to make sure that they are in a comfortable place and in a, you know, and making sure they're in friendly confines of somewhere surrounded by Longhorn fans so that they can watch the Longhorns take on Penn State. We'll talk about that matchup, actually. Before we do that, we'll review the matchup they had versus Colgate. Big win for Texas, 81-61, first round of the tournament. So congrats to the guys. And it was a dominant performance by them for probably about 34 of the 40 minutes. Sergeant Barry Rice stole the show. He had 7 made three-pointers. That was a Texas tournament record for made threes. He also ended up with 23 points, and the Big 12 Sixth Man of the Year really showed why, you know, probably is going to win or should win the National Sixth Man of the Year. And although he is a sixth man, man, he is him. He was the main man for the Longhorns last night. Also had 2 steals, 3 assists, 6 rebounds. He's the one that set the tone, Patrick. When he came off the bench, and yes, they did end up starting Timmy Allen, but when he came off the bench, he really provided a ton of juice and a ton of really just it's just instant offense. And I don't think he's been that hot from three-point range all season long. I'm not sure the Longhorns, at least since they started conference play, have been that hot from three-point range. They hit 13 threes, shot nearly 57% from three-point range, and really Colgate had no shot because they smothered them on the three-point line.
Yeah, I mean, it was a game of a good game plan for Texas that just happened to go right. You know, you never know in a building you're not used to playing in on the road if you're going to be able to hit threes. We know that Colgate was kind of letting them get a little bit more space. They didn't want to drive past them, and they run that little screen play for Jabari Rice over and over again, run the screen where if the guy goes underneath, he shoots, and if he goes over it and tries to fight through the screen, he just barrels it to the basket and get that layup. They kept going underneath and kept going underneath and kept going underneath, and Jabari Rice just started to get on fire at that point. And I think what was really impressive, too, about Texas and their adjustments was they started off just insanely hot shooting 3. They then started to miss a few and didn't keep shooting. They then went to, like, all right, let's get the ball into Dessou. Let's get the ball into Christian Bishop. Let's try and drive the paint, and let's try and get some other buckets and not just shoot ourselves back out of the game because we shot ourselves a big lead and then have so many empty possessions where the other team can catch the ball and start running with it and get back down the court. They made those adjustments after, and so I think that Colgate got a little bit of a run back on them because they started to miss a few, and they fixed that real quick, took some more high percentage shots, and then when the defense backed off them a little bit more, the threes were open again, and they hit some more threes.
Right, they did. It was great shot selection by Texas, and I think Colgate made it easy on them. As you said, they gave them way too much space. Texas decided, you know what, we're going to take those threes. Texas not known for being a prolific three-point shooting team, so that was an added bonus for them. What Texas is known for, their identity, their calling card, is their defense. And when Texas decides to take away a concept, an element, a player, schematically, they do a really good job of it. They want to take away the three-pointer. That was pretty obvious that Coach Terry wanted to neutralize the three-point threat from Colgate, and they did a masterful job at it. Colgate hit 3 three-pointers. That is the tied for the season low for them. This is a team, Patrick, that came into this game averaging close to 9 three-pointers per game, but percentage-wise, they were the best three-point shooting team in the country. Last 3 years, they've been a top 3 three-point shooting team, and they shot 20%. From three-point range. So Texas, and you brought this up yesterday, they decided, you know what, our big men down low in the post, hey, one-on-one, we're going to have to let that, we're going to have to live with that no matter what the outcome is, whoever the matchup is down low, we'll have to live with a one-on-one, and we'll just smother the perimeter. And that's exactly what they did.
Yeah, and I mean, we saw that, you know, Woodward had a really good game, and Records had a good game in the post. They combined for 21 points. So even though it looked like at points they were like, man, they're just dominating in the middle, they weren't. So they did very well, but they weren't able to consistently go down and put up 25 points on you where you're like, oh, there's a problem. So neither of them ever became a problem, even though they were having success. There was enough times that you waste 20 seconds on a shot clock because they're backing a guy down, turn around 2 feet from the basket and miss the shot. Ball gets poked out, Texas gets it and gets it on the run. And when you play that kind of offense too, it really takes the rest of the team of Colgate out of the game to where they don't feel good about shooting anymore. They don't feel good about playing defense anymore. And so you can't do that the whole time. I could tell you after watching that game all the way through that Colgate's coach is definitely an analytics guy.
Oh, I can see that. Yeah.
Because
he's basically a D'Antoni type system.
Yeah, they basically, yeah. I mean, I saw them maybe take 2 to 3 mid-range jumpers that entire
they're
game.
They're in the paint or they're 3-point
shots. Yeah, and it was everything was a back off the backboard layup or, you know, a post-up move or a three. And Texas, and when you play that style against good defensive teams, they know how to stop it to a point to go, yeah, we'll just contest everything at the basket, but we don't have to come out on you really. And so where a Dylan Dessou and a Timmy Allen and even Marcus Carr can eat all day long because in that mid-range game, Colgate didn't have anybody like that, and it made it easier to defend them in the hole because you understood they're really only going to take shots. And I think they hit the mid-range ones is why I remember them, because you'd see it and go, oh, they took a mid-range jumper.
They should do that more.
Like, I get analytics, but you're losing. Change it up.
No, I'm with that. I totally agree with your theory about analytics with them too, because I even was reading like a breakdown about them. It was like they compared their philosophy to D'Antoni.
Yeah.
Even their philosophy. Yeah, they're all about the three-point shot and getting in the paint. The mid-range game doesn't exist for them. But you got to give Texas a ton of credit. I love what you said too. Even though Texas got hot from outside, because even Marcus Carr ended up with 4 3-pointers, I believe it was too.
Yes.
They got hot from outside, hitting 33 points, but they didn't fall for the trap of trying to shoot themselves. It wasn't a constant heat check and shoot themselves out of the game. They really did. They chose their shot selection very wisely. And Dylan Dessou. The fact that he is now playing his best basketball of the season, even more than Sergio Barry Rice, is fantastic. Right? He's amazing. I remember, like I said, I talked to some Texas basketball coaches. I had a brief little 3-minute conversation with them, and I was trying to get as much info as I could. And I asked him just straight up. I was like, "Who's the guy? Just tell me who the guy is. All right, who's the guy?" Every coach knows who the guy is. And without hesitation, the coach said, "It's Sergio Barry Rice."
Yeah.
I came on the show the next day. I said, "Guys, the coach is telling me Sergio Barry Rice is the guy. He's the guy."
Yeah.
And turns out he is him. I mean, there is no question. That guy, he's got ice water in his veins. He loves the moment. It's never too big for him. And I think his ability to really be malleable in his role that he needs to play, because he comes off the bench, so whatever they need offense, he can be instant offense. He also was a defensive presence as well. Had 2 steals, 3 assists, 6 rebounds. I just love, I mean, that's the old quote about what Bruce Lee talks about, be like water. That's Sergio Barry Rice to me.
I like that.
Like water,
that.
Man.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, it's that old man game with athleticism that he just plays that game of, it's just smart basketball so much. But he has that chip on his shoulder that he wasn't recruited. He has that chip on his shoulder that these big schools didn't want him. And now when he's getting the chance to shine right now, he is taking every single chance to show everybody, hey, man, you were wrong about me before. You're still wrong about me, and I'm better than you think I am. And I think Dylan Dessou is doing that too. That Dylan Dessou, is a guy who wanted to go to Texas, didn't get recruited by Texas, goes to Vanderbilt, proves it there, and has come here and not been able to have the impact that he wanted to, and is now finally getting to have it. We saw Dylan Dessou pick up that third foul. And,
that was scary.
And he went, oh, and he finished the game with 3 fouls. And he picks up, that's a common one for Dylan Dessou, because he is trying to box out and do the right thing, and they just call him because a guy jumps, and he's backing into a guy, and it's normally an over-the-back, but it's normally a guy who's not even going for the rebound. They just jumped, and it looks like he undercut him, but he didn't really, and it's like a 50-50 call that you shouldn't call at all. But whenever it depends on when the ref's head looks around.
When the guy's falling.
So when he looks, and the guy's in the air, and Dylan Dessou's underneath him, then they go, well, that's a foul on Dylan Dessou. You undercut him. But he's like, but the guy was there. He just jumped while Dylan DeSue was backing into him.
Yeah. No, yeah, it's a big man's curse, too. So I just look, you look like you're being aggressive just because you're big.
So he gets that foul called on him, and it's just smart enough to go, all right, don't pick up the dumb one. So that one was the worst one, but it wasn't terrible. He's able to stay in the game.
He did that in the Kansas game, I think, too. Picked up an early two fouls. And then he was able to finish the game.
Yep.
He got himself under control. I like that. That shows maturity, man. That's maturity. I remember you saying during the season that was the big issue with him. It was like he'll end up in foul trouble. He's great for the time you got him, but if he ends up in foul trouble, you got to take him off the floor. And he's done a great job of being able to keep himself composed after that foul, not getting, like you said, the stupid foul, the silly foul. Not stupid, it's more the silly foul. Also, Dylan DeSue, third straight game with at least 15 points and 70% field goal shooting from the field. When you have him playing at a really high level, and by the way, Christian Bishop is actually playing really well too. He had 8 points, 5 rebounds. And then you combine that with, and Marcus Carr, like I said, he, other than the 5 turnovers, he was plus 24 in plus minus, but he did have 5 turnovers. But he gave you your 17 points. But when Texas is scoring like that and you know their defense comes to play, they're just going to be hard to beat. I mean, that team that we saw versus Colgate, that's a team playing to a standard and not playing to their opponent. And if they play to that standard, this is a team that can make a run to the Final Four. They really can, because their defense right now, they're playing their best defense of the season. I'll give you a great defensive stat. Shout out to my man Christian Corona, because he's the one I got it from. Colgate was the only team to make 40%, basically over 40% of their threes this year. Texas held them to 20%, which is their season low, and they made 3 three-pointers, which was also their season low. You go look at the top two teams by effective field goal percentage this season, the Zags and Colgate, 59%, and basically both of them were at 59% if you round up, 59%. Texas held both of them to a combined, a collective 51% effective field goal percentage and beat them by 39 points. Now, we know Colgate, very different opponent than the Zags. Not saying that. But just talking about prolific offenses, schematically, conceptually, when Rodney Terry and this team decide they want to take something away, they do have the dogs to execute the scheme.
Yeah. And, I mean, we saw Tyrese Hunter play 37 minutes in that game yesterday. Like, Tyrese Hunter was out there playing hard D, and it's only 10 points. He did miss some threes. That guy plays his butt off on defense. And that's something you need, because I think when you got Tyrese Hunter, everybody was expecting him to be this big scorer. He's turned out his role on this team this year has been different, because he is now a guy that is not necessarily having to facilitate as much on the offensive end, but defensively, shutting guys down has been his role. He's going to have to do that coming up on tomorrow, because Penn State has several guys.
They got two of them. That
can score on you, and they like to play 4 guards. He is going to be on the court. He was 37 minutes in that game. I mean, we're looking at another 37-minute game.
I agree, because the two guys you got to take away, since looking ahead to Penn State, Andrew Funk, who, man, we thought Sergio Barrett-Rice was hot from three-point range. Andrew Funk ended up 8 of 10 from three-point range. That's crazy. I don't know all season long if this is kind of something, you know, that he does all the time. But for Sergio Barrett-Rice, obviously he set a record, and I wonder if, hell, Andrew Funk might have set a record too. But between he and Jalen Pickett, who had 19 versus A&M, I believe it was, he's supposed to be the straw that stirs the drink, though, right? He's leading the team in points, rebounds, assists, and steals. He's the guy. Those are your two guys.
Yeah.
If you can neutralize those two threats, you got a really good chance of winning in Texas. That's, as Patrick pointed out, they've been really good at taking at least taking away one of a team's best two weapons.
Yeah, and I mean, we've seen this with Texas, that people started to focus really on Marcus Carr when he was tearing it up early in the season, and that's when Jabari Rice came out of his shell and just became the scoring star that he has become. And I think that's what happened with Funk in that game, is you go, all right, we're putting all of our assets to cover Jalen Pickett. And then that's the other guy comes out. So that's where you go, if Tyrese Hunter's on Jalen Pickett, that means Serge Jabari Rice, that means Timmy Allen, that means Marcus Carr, that means Arturo Morris, if he gets a little bit more run, because you may be playing some more small lineups against them. Those guys are going to have to make sure, whoever's on that assignment, you know your assignment. It's more difficult with Colgate. You had a week that you could scout this team, and a week you could prepare and really teach all the kids the assignments.
Yeah.
Like Marcus Carr in that game, one of the things that he forgot was that if you're throwing the ball near Tucker Richardson, he's going to go for the steal. And he just threw lazy passes down court.
Yeah.
And it was two or three of the turnovers were lazy passes around Tucker Richardson. And he just made a lazy pass on a team that is designed to go for the steal. And that's just not knowing your scouting report and knowing, hey, man, everything needs to be crisp because these guys, they will blow an assignment to go for a steal.
Goes to the point about 13 turnovers. You want to criticize anything about the game, that's probably the most critical point.
Yeah, and so,
turnovers.
But that's just not reading your scouting report and go, no, man, I get that that's the bad defensive play to go for that steal. Because nine times out of 10, that's a catch and a dunk because that guy's falling over out of bounds. But when they steal it, when you're just doing lazy passes, but that's the thing, is you need to know your scouting report going against Penn State now, and you have today to learn it.
Yes, good point. You don't have all week to get comfortable with it, practice it, learn.
Yeah,
you got.
You're going to get a walkthrough probably. You'll probably do a walkthrough in the hotel today. You'll probably do a walkthrough in the hotel tomorrow and then get out on the court a little bit. But, yeah, there is not a lot of time for you to go down and remember, and you're just going to have to go, all right, here's the main guys, and if they throw something at us.
We'll adjust on the fly.
Yeah.
Roddy Terry's got to earn that money.
And I'll give you.
Adjust on the fly.
We'll give a shout out to Fireball, who's their video guy. He does a really good job. I'm sure he had a package prepared for A&M and a package prepared for Penn State before the game. They was already done. Their assistants, and I'm sure they had guys that were scouting both teams to make sure that they were not – the coaches would be ready. But you're not trying to load that on to the players before a game against Colgate because then they look past the game. But you have your student assistants and everybody else working on scouting both those other teams, knowing, look, there's one of two options. Let's scout both of them. So when it gets to Saturday, we're ready to go.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. Yeah, you got to be prepared for all possible scenarios, especially at this time of the year. Let's give you a couple of superlatives about Penn State. First of all, they're top 10 in three-point rate, meaning three-point attempts and three-point percentage. So they can shoot it, as we just saw last night. They can shoot it. And they take care of the basketball. They rank 98, basically ranking the 98th percentile in jump shooting efficiency. Per synergy. So they're really good at jump shooting efficiency. They're also 43rd nationally in defensive rebounding. So, yeah, like Kogi, they like to shoot the three-point shot, but they also crash the boards. That has been a challenge for Texas. Texas has done really well at kind of having a group effort, team effort of crashing the boards. They're going to need to be on their A game when it comes to hitting the boards versus Penn State. They're 7th lowest team in terms of turnover rate in the tourney, so they're really good in taking care of the basketball. Texas has got to force some turnovers. Somehow, I mean, Texas can put a lot of pressure on them, and when they're smothering the perimeter defensively, they're also 38th in foul rate. They don't foul you a lot. They don't try to give you a lot of easy points at the foul line. So those, you know, for Texas, you know, usually if you're not hot from 3-point range, and that's as hot as we've seen Texas from 3-point range, you're trying to manufacture buckets, trying to manufacture points by getting to the paint, driving to the bucket. They're really good at defending that, but not even trying to, you know, not fouling and not giving up the easy points at the free throw line. So those are some of the things that are your strengths, but I think Texas matches up really well with them because they want to shoot the three-point shot. Texas is really good at defending the three-point shot, and they like to go small, and Texas, they got a lot of good guards.
Yeah, and I think we have bigs that can run too. So you have bigs that a team like this could really kill you if you didn't have bigs that could run the court. Because these guys now can, if they're going to go small, they can run. And you can get killed in that transition game if you can't rim protect at all. Christian Bishop, Dylan DeSue can both run really well. Brock Cunningham's pretty good at it. He's not, but those two other guys clearly a step above in rim and being able to run the court. And I think you may see, too, there's going to be points in the game where everyone's going to have to step up their defense and not allow threes. Because if you know, hey, man, they can't guard two bigs at any given time. We got some good passing bigs. We may pull out and see if they're going to pull out on Bishop or DeSue,
yeah,
and then throw that pass to the cutter, and they're going to have no one to protect the rim. So we could see that as well as a little bit more high-low game with some of the guards, or if you have a Brock Cunningham or a Christian Bishop who's been showing a lot of really good passing and good sight of his players. I think you could see that of him where he kind of comes out trying to draw the guy out, and if not, it's a 12-foot jump shot. So you have to guard me, and Dylan Nassu has that little push shot day long. But you have to, if you're going to play that game too, you need to make sure you really protect the 3-point line on defense, because you don't want to be giving up three and then scoring two on the other end. In this game, it became easy because you were guarding the 3-point line and hitting threes. In this, when you're talking about Penn State, it goes into, hey man, if we're going to try and shoot twos because we know we have a definitive advantage on the inside, then let's really lock down that 3-point line. And worst case scenario, we're trading 2-point buckets if we're both scoring at a point. But we're not letting them eke back into this game by every time down. We're up 12, and now it's 11, and now it's 10, and now it's 9. And now all of a sudden they hit 3, and now it's 6. You're like, oh, what happened? You're like, well, we were trading buckets, but they were getting 3 every time we were getting 2.
I'm with you. The 3-point line, or at least the 3-point defense, your perimeter defense, got to be your top priority. This texter here brings up a good point. See, I think Penn State is a terrible matchup, a problem for the Horns. 3-point teams with a guard that can drive to the basket. Ouch. I will say Jalen Pickett has an unorthodox game. Because he'll kind of get in the post and bat guys down. It's an unorthodox game for a point guard, a modern point guard, I should say. It's almost a throwback game a little bit.
Yeah, and I don't know if they have quite the athleticism of what killed us against like K-State with Noel, where Noel is just so speedy and has such good ball handling.
You can't get in front of him.
There is a part of like they could drive. So these guys are going to drive, but our guys can stay with them a little bit better. And I get it's a tournament. We're past the 2-15 matchup. Pretty much every matchup is going to have some part in it now where you go, ooh, I don't like that. The one thing you don't want is two bigs that can score at will. That is the one main thing that Texas is afraid of, because that is a really hard game for Texas to defend, is a team like who knocked out Texas before, Purdue, last year.
It's a roster limitation. It's like you can't schematically, there's not much you can do to adjust to it.
Yes, yeah, because if they have a 7-footer and a 6'10 guy who can score at will, what do you do with that?
There's not much you can do.
Yeah, because then you just go, well, they're just backing us down. What
we
do you want to say?
We can double them, but then we can leave people open on a 3-point line.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, it is. I agree with you 100%. That's a roster limitation issue. That's not a coaching schematic, conceptual issue. And that's what you're hoping. You're hoping that, like you said, the problem is something that can be schematically or conceptually resolved or remedied by the coaching staff or by the players themselves. What you don't want, like you said, is that one problem you cannot solve because you don't have the resources to do it.
Yeah, and we saw yesterday there was times where they had lapses and Colgate got threes and they corrected them quickly. The next game, those lapses are going to result in more points because Penn State's a better team. So Penn State will probably hit a couple more of those. You just have to make those adjustments back pretty quickly.
Penn State also really good versus the press. Obviously, Texas will know this, but they're the best team versus the press in the tournament. It's like them and Creighton. In case you try to press him. And I think a lot of that is Jalen Pickett.
It's Jalen Pickett, and playing four guards.
Exactly. Yeah, there you go. Boom.
Who are you going to get who doesn't know how to pass and ball handle?
Great point. Yeah, there you go. So I think the matchup for Texas is a good matchup. Obviously, as Patrick pointed out, it's the tournament, so ain't no easy wins. But Texas is good when they go small. They've been at their best lately going small. And this team wants to go small, so I think it'll be a good matchup. All right, we'll talk a little bit more about that. We come back. We got Raj around the day. Let's just play this Adam Schefter report. Adam Schefter is throwing a ton of confusion out there about the number one overall pick and what the Panthers are going to do with the number one overall pick and what their intentions are. We'll talk about that. We'll play that audio and discuss right here on Ball Don't Lie, 104.9 The Horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
You've done it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to Ball Don't Lie right here on 104.9 The Horn. Time for Rod's Rant of the Day. I want to get into a little NFL draft discussion here because there's a new report from Adam Schefter. And this is the silly season, so you get a lot of misinformation thrown out there. Teams are throwing out misinformation just to try to motivate other teams, potentially to incentivize them to trade up or to trade down or for them to overrate or underrate a certain player. A lot of mind games being played these days. Adam Schefter may be a part of that, so I just preface this audio with that. But Adam Schefter went on ESPN and he was talking about the Panthers and their intention with the number one overall pick. Now, if you're a Texans fan like I am, you're paying close attention to the discussion about what the Panthers are going to do with number one overall pick because you got the second overall pick and you may just have to take the quarterback they don't want if they are indeed taking a quarterback. So here is the latest from Adam Schefter on what's going on with the Panthers in the top overall pick.
But this offseason is going to be defined by what this team does with the number one overall pick. They made the bold move last week to trade up to get to number one, and now they'll sift through the quarterback options. And I think going into the process of evaluating the quarterbacks, I think that Bryce Young is the favorite to become the number one overall pick, and they will go in with an really?
Yeah, that's – let's live there for just a second if we can, because some people have thought maybe Anthony Richardson climbed into that conversation after the combine.
C.J. Stroud.
You're hearing C.J. Stroud, especially with that offensive line.
Going into the process, I think – let me say it this way. I think Bryce Young is to the Panthers what Mac Jones was to the 49ers when they traded up. They traded up with the idea that they really liked Mac Jones, and then they went through the process – and wound up on Trey Lance. I think in this particular case, this team moved up with the idea that Bryce Young was a guy that they loved. They also really like C.J. Stroud. He's definitely got support within the organization. And we'll see what transpires during the course of evaluations. But I think at the beginning of the process, it starts out with Bryce Young as the favorite.
Okay. First of all, man. The fact that Schefter reiterated that Shano and the 49ers traded all the way up in the draft, he thought to go get Mac Jones, basically. That was their intention. Remember, I remember Sims, my boy Sims, Lifetime Longhorn, Chris Sims, he did say the same thing. And I know he has a direct pipeline to Shano. I'm not saying he got it from him, but that's what he said. And then there are reports that Shano really liked Mac Jones and was persuaded, I should say, by the front office to go Trey Lance. But I digress. This is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about the number one overall pick, and now Adam Schefter says he believes it's going to be Bryce Young. Here's why that's a little strange, because Adam Schefter also reported this, and this was like a week ago. We talked about this on the show. He said, I just hung up. This is the quote from Adam Schefter. Just hung up the phone with someone in the organization with the Panthers, they said there's a belief that Dave Tepper loves Bryce Young. That's the owner. But Frank Reich likes C.J. Stroud. And they said, we love all these quarterbacks, and we've got 48 days to make a decision on which one we'll be taking. But clearly, they felt comfortable in giving up the compensation that they did to move up 8 slots to procure the number one overall draft pick ahead of other teams that were interested in it to getting that particular pick. Okay, so if they didn't know who they were going to get, I can kind of believe that because I listened to Mel Kiper the other day, and Mel Kiper said there have been multiple instances in the drafts that he's covered of teams moving up into the top 5, even number one overall, and not knowing who they were going to get. He said sometimes, a lot of times, teams know. Sometimes teams don't know. They just want the leverage of having that position in the draft, that power position, if you will. So I can believe that. And now if he's saying Bryce Young is the guy, Patrick, I just believe that Dave Tepper, the owner, the guy who signs the checks, won the power struggle if there was a power struggle about a Bryce Young or a C.J. Stroud, because history would suggest that Frank Reich has a type, and his type, it ain't an undersized, slight quarterback who's an outlier like Bryce Young.
Yeah, and I mean, this is all – we're still far enough away from the draft.
Yes.
That anything could change. I'm sure Frank Reich will make his case as far as he can. We know that sometimes owners who are GMs don't get their way of drafting quarterbacks. Jerry Jones, Johnny Manziel.
Thank God.
But that was a guy who loved a quarterback, and he loved the quarterback. Also, I can tell you, I don't know if an owner who's ever said he liked anything. Coaches say they like things. Owners love everything.
Well, because they're billionaires.
Yeah.
Because billionaires can afford to love everything because they can just buy it. when you're middle class, you're like, I like that. I window shop it. I don't know if I'm going to buy it.
I'm not sure.
I put it on layaway.
Yeah. Let me go look around a little bit more.
Exactly.
I got to move some things around.
Exactly right.
No, that's Frank Reich's like, look, I like CJ Stroud, but let's look around.
Yeah.
We'll see where the best value is. Look, maybe there's a coupon.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I got to compare pricing here, man. Shopping.
No,
I'm with you.
But David Tepper goes, I like that Maserati. All the colors, please.
And I'll take it. I'll take it in cash. I'll pay for it. So I think you got a good point there about the personalities here. I'm with you. I think there's still enough time for Frank Reich to convince, and now he's a billionaire now, basically convince Dave Tepper that C.J. Stroud is his idea. Because you can't convince him anything else because they're billionaires, but basically convince him that C.J. Stroud is the best pick for the organization.
No, and I'll tell you this. If you're Frank Reich and you want to convince him C.J. Stroud is the best guy, you need to call up Adam Schefter. You need to call up every single person and leak out there about how great C.J. Stroud is and give him everything to talk positive about C.J. Stroud. Because if you are not following and doing the scouting yourself and everything else, and you turn on the media, Bryce Young is the only quarterback. Him and Anthony Richardson are the two quarterbacks in this draft, because nobody talks about C.J. Stroud. Will Levis has dropped off because now Anthony Richardson has replaced Will Levis as the physical, the guy. So we know Will Levis still has the arm, but Anthony Richardson has an arm too, and he can run. So now he's
a freak show.
He's the freak show guy that Will Levis was supposed to be.
Yep.
So now those are the two conversations. Bryce Young is clearly the best quarterback, but is he too small? C.J. Stroud just doesn't get the positive.
It's so crazy because I think you're right, and it's weird that the two more are closer to the traditional quarterbacks or prototypical quarterbacks, Will Levis, C.J. Stroud, they're kind of taking a back seat in the kind of the media storm, if you will, of this offseason to Bryce Young, the ultimate outlier, right? Never had a quarterback be drafted that high who's that slight and, what is he, 5'11", 5'10", whatever he is?
Yeah, he's like 5'10",
5'10", half, whatever it is. So you never had a quarterback that slight, because he's going to be really slight to, I think, 190 pounds, 92 pounds, something like that. So you never had that slight, that small, drafted as high as he is, and then you go to Anthony Richardson, which he is a physical freak, but he is a project. Speaking of, Todd McShay had a report out a couple of weeks ago about the Panthers and Anthony Richardson, to add to Patrick's point. He says in his latest mock draft, he said, quote, "We still don't know which signal caller Carolina will target, and it could truthfully be any of the top four names. I've even heard a little buzz about Anthony Richardson, who is a raw prospect, but is coming off a huge combine performance." Yeah, Josh Allen is making Anthony Richardson a ton of money right now. Because everybody's just making you see what happened with Josh Allen. He's like, well, he's not really accurate. Well, you see what happened with Josh Allen. I agree. Josh Allen, that was a remarkable, miraculous development by him. Because I've never seen a quarterback be so inefficient and underwhelming at a lower level of football be drafted as high as Josh Allen was drafted. It's never happened before. And give it up to Brian Daboll and that staff. They really were able to kind of reinvent his skill set, maximize his strengths, and limit his weaknesses. And now he's one of the better quarterbacks in the league. But I agree kind of with Mike Leach about this, the late, great Mike Leach about it. Mike Leach would always say, I'd rather take a shortstop who had an accurate arm and turn him into a quarterback rather than take a quarterback with a really strong arm with a cannon who couldn't really make the accurate throw.
Yeah.
He said, I'd rather take a guy who, he said, accuracy matters way more in football, in his opinion, than the big arm that can make all the throws. But you can make all the throws, but you can't make them accurately, then what's the point? He wanted a guy that can make accurate throws. And Anthony Richardson, that's some of that in him. Now, Josh Allen, he was able to, you know, like I said, develop and cultivate his skill set, and now he is considered a more accurate quarterback. But everybody remembers early on, Josh Allen was all big arm, no accuracy.
Yeah.
And they did a real job of now fine-tuning that. You're basically rolling the dice that you can do that with Anthony Richardson. I'm not saying Frank Reich can't, but Frank Reich he likes big quarterbacks and he likes prototypical quarterbacks, not necessarily quarterbacks like Anthony Richardson. His history is he inherited an Andrew Luck, then he brought in a Brian Hoyer, a Jacoby Brissett, a Phillip Rivers, a Carson Wentz. You got a Matt Ryan in there, Sam Ellinger. Basically, all of the starting quarterbacks that Frank Reich has had, they're all prototypical 6'5", 6'6", 6'4", quarterbacks. So that definitely tells me he's not interested in Bryce Young, the outlier, but also tells me he might not be as interested in the Anthony Richardson project either.
No.
I see him as a Stroud guy and a Will Levis guy.
No, and that's, I think, if you asked Tepper, he would say the guys that are in the media, the guys that he sees on TV. He turns on the TV, and who are they talking about and showing highlights of? That's the guys I love, because look at them. Not only that, they're going to make me a lot of money because they're on TV. You want to give me the boring guy who can win games? We better win a bunch, and winning costs me more money. Winning costs me money, and it can make me, but that's a harder proposition than go get me the splashy guy who's going to make me a bunch of money up front. I think that you hired Frank Reich. I bet that he will win out in this.
He should.
But I could see I could see it coming down a lot more to the wire. And I could see, you know, Tepper understanding how business works, continuing to try and stir the pot as much as he can to
generate interest, buzz, and free
because,
media.
Hey, yeah. Man, until they trade for that number one pick, this is the most anyone's talked about Carolina since Jake Delhomme. And they were winning games.
And they went to the Super Bowl.
That's what I'm saying.
Went to the Super
Bowl.
That's
what I'm saying.
Man.
They
I
went to the
that.
Super Bowl. That's
I went
how
to
long
that Super Bowl.
I mean, like, you, the most you got last year was people were like, they're signing Baker. That's not going to work.
No, you said that's a great point, too, about the owners just trying to, you know, pull in your best Jerry Jones. Everybody learns from Jerry Jones, like, hey, man, generate interest. And I will say this, too. You also want to keep the hope alive that you could trade that pick, because there's a talk that they still would, and a lot of this may be smoke signals to the Texans, like, hey, if you want to make a deal, we still be willing to make a deal, because that's why they like all the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
We like all of them, so we don't give a damn if you want to trade
up
to get your guy.
If we tell you who we're taking, then there's no interest, because
exactly.
You're fine at two.
Exactly.
If you're a Bryce Young fan and they said C.J. Stroud, oh, sure.
Yeah.
Go right ahead, you guys.
So all the teams that may be interested in that quarterback, they got to keep the availability open, keep hope alive. And I think that a lot of this is for the Texans. Like, hey, Texans, you know, if you love one of these quarterbacks and you got to have them, we're open for business, because we'll take the other guy because we like him too. So I think this might be the the Texans, listen, I'm still not opposed to the Texans making that move. I'm not sure the Texans want right now. I don't know if we know that. And I'm not sure if they're like the Carolina Panthers are. We'll take either one of C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young, whichever one the Panthers don't get.
Yeah, and I mean, it all depends, too, of are you a ceiling guy, or are you we want a day one starter, or, you know, are you a floor guy who says, what's the worst possible scenario? Because what's the worst possible scenario? You probably look at a Bryce Young and go, you know what? This is probably, like, him being his bad is, like, he'd get hurt. But playing-wise, we know he's going to be a good quarterback. And then if you look at a C.J. Stroud, you're like, well, he does, but there's been history with Ohio State quarterbacks before, and that system at Ohio State, maybe if we don't run the same type of offense, there may be issues. And Will Levis and Anthony Richardson, you go, man, the upside is so high. But that floor, we could draft Carson Wentz.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that's it's a different philosophy for every team, but – I think it's Frank Reich is making a decision, and you and I both agree he's going to have a ton of input. He has a type. I have a type. If you go look at all my exes, I probably have a type. It's probably big booty brunettes. Who knows? I don't know what my type is. Go look at all of them. You probably will notice a trend. And when you look at Frank Reich's quarterback, you notice a trend. Peyton Manning, 6'5", Phillip Rivers, 6'5", Carson Wentz, 6'5", Nick Foles, 6'6", Andrew Luck, 6'4", Matt Ryan, 6'4". You get it. I think he's going for a C.J. Stroud or Will Levis in the end.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
all this is just histrionics. It's just theater.
Yeah. I mean, look, they probably haven't had that sit-down full discussion of who we are, like, for sure drafting yet, because you're still, what, over a month out?
Oh, you got plenty of time.
So that'll come closer to time, and then it'll come down to, all right, do they announce beforehand, or do they push it out the whole way to try and see if the Texans freak out? And
they'll never reveal it. I think they'll keep it until draft day.
Because
on draft day, you still might get a team that goes, you know what, we want to make a
freak out and go, you're going to take our guy before someone gets super high on Anthony Richardson.
Yep.
And they're worried that the Panthers may take him. And they, you know what, we'll give you more than you gave up to move back two spots.
Yeah, there is no incentive for them to reveal it. All the power and the leverage is in keeping it as secret as possible and keeping options available.
Yep.
All right, good discussion. We'll come back. We got Off the Record on this side right here on Ball Don't Lie, 104.9 Horn. Five-one-two Friday edition of Ball Don't Lie. We play jams from very talented human beings that you can catch live right here in the ATX. Who are we jamming right now, Patrick?
This is Evan Charles, and he's playing Saturday at the San Jack Saloon.
All right, if you miss any of the suggestions for 5-1-2 Friday, you can go check them out for yourself at hornfm.com. All right, you know that Giselle and Tom Brady called it quits, of course. Tom Brady has, I think there's been rumors and reports that he is dated somebody since the divorce, but it hasn't been. There haven't been prevalent reports of
it. No leaks.
Yeah, there haven't been a lot of reports of it. Like but Giselle, there have been now multiple reports of her dating multiple guys since the divorce.
Yeah,
she's now rumored to. Because remember, first it was the jiu-jitsu instructor Joaquin Valente. Remember, 5 months after she finalized her quickie divorce with Tom Brady, she moved on with this Brazilian jiu-jitsu instructor.
Wow.
And apparently, he used to be the family's like jiu-jitsu instructor.
The family's, yes.
Yeah, like, I mean, Tom Brady took lessons and so did the kids and yeah. Giselle. And then now he moved in like that. Wow. And now, how about this one? Another friend of Tom. The Brazilian model has been spending time with billionaire hotel magnate Jeffrey Sofer, reportedly. He's a friend of ex-husband Tom Brady and a former husband of Australian supermodel Elle McPherson. So the two guys she's allegedly dated or reportedly dated since the divorce, Tom Brady knew them both. Woo! Man, a woman scorned. Oh, she'd get back at you.
I can tell you this. I've seen Elle McPherson in person recently and still got it.
Oh, I bet she does.
Still got it.
And Giselle
still got it. She's dating Doyle Bramhall, musician here in town.
Oh, really?
The guy who used to be married to Renee Zellweger.
Oh, what?
Yeah, he does all right for himself.
Nice. So Elle McPherson been kicking it in the ATS?
Yeah, so I saw her. I went to one of the shows he was playing at.
What?
And she comes out, she's taking pictures of the band.
Whoa, how? Oh, so you saw it up close and personal that she's doing well. How old is she now? Do we know? I gotta look that up. Okay.
58 years old.
Okay. Wow. There you go.
Still doing good.
She's a supermodel. Yeah. Supermodels age really well. Giselle's aging really well.
Yeah. Well, she's having a lot of fun now.
She is. I mean,
now that Tom's gotta take the kids on some of these weekends.
Oh, and he knows all the guys she's dating.
You know, she hasn't probably had a weekend off of kids. Like, I mean, they got nannies and stuff.
Oh, I think Tom is taking the kids on
weekends. He's working weekends.
Well, now he's got a lot of free time.
Now he's got free time.
Take those damn kids for a turn. Or how about this? Tom Brady and this new guy she's dating, Jeffrey Sofer, they became neighbors. They were neighbors.
Man, Tom Brady, you pick really bad friends.
They bought land to build their forever home next to his mansion, next to this guy Sofer's mansion. They were neighbors.
Dude, how many
in Miami?
How many people has Tom Brady fed?
Wow.
That are currently on the list trying to get with his ex-wife.
Yeah, you know what? That's a violation. If they are true friends, then that is a violation of the G-code, bro. Y'all were neighbors and friends?
Neighbors and friends.
And the jiu-jitsu guy.
Do you think, as soon as that report came out, his ex-wife called him up, Elle McPherson called him up, and was like, I knew it!
Man, Elle McPherson and Giselle on your roster? That's legit.
I need $1 billion.
So, don't we all? Don't we all? All right, we come back. We'll wrap it up. We got the last segment before Texas baseball right here on Ball Don't Lie, 104.9 The Horn.